97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Practice rounds underway at Belrive Country Club for the BMW Championship. Our own Dan Reardon, no relation, is going to join us at 5:48 with his update this afternoon. You know, they had 2 inches of rain the other night, and Dan tweeted out that they had to, the groundskeepers, I mean, some of these folks that are on the groundskeeping team that have to keep the course, and it looked beautiful this morning, but they had to do a lot of work bunkers and the sand after that rain. So we'll get a report on that. It's Tech Talk Tuesday with George Rosenthal coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Our friend Batya Ongar-Sargon is back with us, the host of Batya on News Nation, one of my favorite reformed liberals. She always brings the fire. She's got a lot of opinions. She's with us this afternoon. She can sometimes be really sweet and nice, too. She's the whole package. Hi, Batya. How are you? How about that for an intro? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
That was really good, man. Put that on my gravestone.
Right, exactly. So what? Before I go into some questions that I want to ask you, what's got you kind of hot right now today? Is there something that's got you going today that you're tweeting about or on fire about?
I've been thinking a lot about two things. The first is how the Democrats seem very happy to simply relinquish all of the things that they claimed made them the high ground over Trump. So this attack from John Ossoff on Natalie Harp, the president's young staffer, he made a dig implying that the president was sleeping with her.
Hang on, let me play that audio because people might not be familiar with this. So here this is here.
See, he doesn't want to do the job. He wants to build his ballroom and travel with Natalie on their apparently defenseless flying palace gifted by the Emir of Qatar.
I mean, that was quite something, that allegation, right?
I mean, it's so sexist, right? The implication that a woman doing well in her career is sleeping with her boss. It's so gross. Now, the Democrats will say, well, Trump says disgusting things about people all the time, about women. Okay, but wasn't your whole claim that he's dangerous because of that and therefore you're better, right? I'm just so shocked how quickly they're willing to say, like, actually, no, we're just going to meet him in the gutter, you know? So that's the first thing I've been thinking a lot about. The second is Mike Rogers, the Republican running in Michigan, is now running against this complete far-left anti-American lunatic. And it's so amazing because, you know, we talk a lot on this show about how, you know, Jews are Democrats traditionally, 2/3 of Jews, 3/4, and how they seem almost stuck, like that they can't realize how much the Democrats do not want them. A lot of Jews in Michigan are about to vote for a Republican for the first time in their lives. I got to tell you, Mark, once you pop that cherry, it's a lot easier the second time. So that's really interesting to me, the ways in which Jewish voters, Black voters, Hispanic voters, and working class voters want nothing to do with the DSA candidates.
It's interesting, you know, you brought African-American voters up. Isn't that, that's kind of fascinating, but the data on that is very indisputable, I think, right?
Totally, yeah. Every single one of the DSA candidates who's won has lost the vast majority of Black voters who have chosen the other Democrat in the race every single time. And so, you know, the Democrats have this real problem with men. They have a real problem with the working class, and they have a problem keeping working class voters of color. And the DSA, which pretends to be the solution to that problem, is actually just exacerbating it. So they're doing really well with women with a college degree who El Sayed is up with by 20 points. Every other group he's down by. The DSA has basically built, the socialists have built a more white, more elite, more college educated and wealthier mini Democratic Party within the party under the guise of quote unquote economic populism, which they don't really believe in. They just care about like abolish ICE and free Palestine.
I had my good friend and former colleague Dan O'Donnell on earlier. He's at WISN Radio in Milwaukee, and we were talking about like the missed opportunity that was Francesca Hong, because, man, Batya, she would have just been another gift from one of those northern Midwestern states with full idiocy on display. But look, I think that the attention that a lot of us gave her, certainly in the national media, in the 2 weeks leading up to that election, probably cost her the election, because people in Wisconsin kind of got onto her, and Tony Evers, who's a terrible governor, but he does wield some political power, got people to vote for the guy that had pulled out of the race. But still, she got a lot of votes in that race. I mean, I still think she would have won if the national coverage didn't kind of crush her in the final days leading up to the campaign, where she said some stupid things.
It is very interesting, because both parties are kind of playing this game where they're holding their fire in the primaries in the hopes that the party elects the less electable of the primary candidates, so that they'd be easier to beat. I really don't like that, because, like, honestly, I would have rather had a matchup between Haley Stevens and Mike Rogers than Abdullah El-Sayed. Like, as Americans and as patriots, we should all want both parties to be as good as possible. Like, we should want the fight to be over, should we give illegals amnesty or should we deport them? It shouldn't be over, does the state of Israel have the right to exist?
Oh, that's, you're not going to find an argument with me on that. And that's crazy. And, look, what I've said is, because I've been around politics enough, you make assumptions that things are going to happen. You can't take that seat in Michigan for granted. Now, I think that once the truth comes out and once he's exposed, and let's just think about the first Saturday of football, when, if I'm Mike Rogers, I run an ad that shows what El-Sayed said. So I think he's likely to win that. And, obviously there's other states where the control of the Senate will be at play. But, boy, the Republicans have to have that one. Where are you, Batya Angar-Sargon, right now on the end of the memo of understanding? You and I think have shared some of the frustration with President Trump on Iran. So where are you right now? Where's your head on the end of the memo of understanding, which wasn't holding anyway, and with continued threats to kind of finish the job when we're not finishing the job?
I think the Iranians have proven to be a much stiffer foe than the president thought. I still think it was noble of him to take them on, given that I don't think anybody else had the political will to do it. But I think that at this moment, his domestic agenda and his foreign policy agenda are fundamentally in tension with each other, because the foreign policy involves crushing the Iranians, but every time he gets close to doing that, the cost of gas skyrockets and our hopes of taming inflation just go up in smoke. And, it's very hard to say what is the right call here. Does he give up on Iran, try to bring down costs before the midterms, or does he finish the job there? This is why he is the president. He was elected to do that. He got 80 million people to say, you are the person, the right person to make that decision. But the climate in the nation is really bad, and it has this kind of way of metastasizing. So, people feel the economy is not great, and people feel even worse about it than it is, and especially young people. And I think a lot of that is not the president's fault. A lot of it has to do with the housing market, which is just a disaster. Mortgage rates, 6.6%.
And there's no end in sight.
Moving.
Look, if those rates, and they're just not going to magically do that. But look, the impact on the economy, if those rates dropped and people got off the sidelines and started moving and started buying washers and dryers and stuff like that, would be incredible. But there's nobody out there that thinks in any way, shape, or form that those rates are going to settle down to that. So we're going to be stuck in this housing market for a while.
It's very depressing. And I think it's especially depressing because it's obvious that the inflation is not coming from higher wages, right? Like, in a situation where the Fed is weighing, inflation, versus investment opportunity, right? They'll say, like, look, we can't drop the rates because we don't want people to start making too much more money, because then there'll be much more inflation. But it's very obvious that the inflation is not coming from people making more money. It's not coming from more money chasing fewer goods. It's coming from the fact that we're at war with Iran, and so the gas prices and the cost of oil is, quote-unquote, artificially higher because the Strait of Hormuz is quasi-closed. And I just wish, you know.
Well, by the way, I agree with everything. I agree with you on that. And that's why it's one of the reasons I'm concerned about the way that this is, you know, kind of playing out. And it's a little frightening just heading into the midterms. I mean, you can make the case, I think, that the Democrats are not in as good a spot as they would have been without communist candidates getting exposed. But I don't know if that's going to be enough to, you know, put Republicans over the finish line, certainly for the House. I think the Senate, hopefully, they will grab a hold of. I'm glad you came on tonight, Batya. Thank you so much. I hope. How's the TV show going? You're rocking it out?
Yeah, it's going great. We're having a good time.
I knew you would. Thanks. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Every once in a while, you get audio. I get audio that doesn't really. Sometimes things restore your faith in humanity and the country, and then sometimes things really depress you. And Joey Jones, who I think is a Fox contributor, and he does this every once in a while, goes out and talks to young people, students, and asks them very basic questions. Now, I can't, you know, sometimes I will say this as just kind of a caveat. Sometimes these things repopulate, and I'm not sure if this is brand new, but it's certainly new enough where he's asking questions about J.D. Vance and things along those lines. And it's just, again, can I go out in the streets of, maybe I could do this at Belle Reve, where I could put my phone in front of people and ask them questions and try to catch them off guard? And would some people say stupid things? Yeah, probably, because you get nervous and
you
things.
Do.
But these are, like, some of the stuff that I'm about to play you here, these are basic questions. Like, you would think that most young people, maybe not, would know that J.D. Vance is the vice president, right? That doesn't seem too hard.
Who is Donald Trump's vice president?
Am I supposed to know this?
Couldn't tell you. Don't pay attention.
I couldn't tell you.
Wow.
J.D. Vance.
Hey,
vice
got
president,
it.
Vice president.
These are all by the kids. It looks like a spring break thing, right? They're on the beach, and he's asking questions. Joey is.
I don't know.
J.K.
Rowling.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Name the three branches of government.
Okay, this isn't too tough.
I don't know why I chose to do this. Oh, God, I'm bad with all this.
Congress.
Conservative.
Republican. Democrat.
Judicial, legislative.
Oh!
Executive. Give me a hint. I don't know.
Jew?
Jewish?
This whole thing's off the rails. Are you not going to be even air this?
What is the First Amendment of the Constitution?
I have no idea.
I'm allowing you to do it right now.
Oh, free will?
No.
I got nothing.
Freedom of speech?
There you go.
I need help.
There. It just, you hope it's isolated, though, don't you, Sue? Where it's not just all the kids on the beach. You know, he's kind of picking and choosing. It doesn't get better, though.
What is the Second Amendment of the Constitution?
The right to vote?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
You have two of them.
This is a trick question. I don't know.
Bear arms.
You packing?
The right to go places?
You need to get to go. I need to be able to get where you need to go.
Kamala in there, I like that touch. But I mean, these kids are clueless.
Court justices are there.
20.
101.
Lower.
55.
13.
7.
Higher.
8.
One more.
9.
There you go.
Name a justice.
Just one.
What do you mean?
Amy.
What do you mean?
Winehouse.
Amy, what?
I got nothing.
Sonia.
Gomez.
Samuel.
Adams.
John.
Summit.
Katanji.
Oh, I got nothing there.
Neil.
Armstrong. Brett Kavanaugh.
Hey.
I know Nancy something.
Nancy?
No. Pelosi.
Yeah. She's not a justice.
Oh. No.
We just call my dog Nancy Pelosi.
What is this?
Okay. So,
wow.
Not very informed. One more round here.
Who was president in the 1990s?
How am I supposed to know this?
1990s. I wasn't even alive.
Before Bush, I can't really give you anything.
Oh. Joe Clinton?
Joe.
FDR.
Clinton.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I should not have done this.
Yeah.
His wife
shouldn't have.
Ran for president.
I have no idea.
She wanted to break a glass ceiling.
Why would you want to do that?
We tried everything. We tried chisels and screwdrivers and hammers.
Name a state that borders California.
I don't know anything history.
That's geography.
Kentucky.
Florida.
Oregon.
Colorado.
I'm trying to think of maybe what's to the left.
Well, that's the Pacific Ocean.
Got it, yep.
I worry about this generation.
What's to the left?
It's a national emergency.
We're at the Jersey Shore.
Yep.
What is the capital of New Jersey?
Princeton?
Newark.
No.
All right, no, I'm not that silly. I know it's Newark.
Trenton?
I didn't know that one. I will be honest.
That's pretty
good. I think I would have said Newark. So there
you
go.
Do you know who I am?
No.
Here's Johnny.
So that's pretty fun. But again, doesn't exactly instill faith in the youths of America.
Wow.
Does it? You know, I'm kind of teasing Alexa a lot, but also not joking with her. And I've done this to my older kids as well. And I'm not making any kind of criticism about the quality of teachers that she'll have or any of the quality of teachers that are out there right now. So don't misinterpret what I'm about to say. But I've told my daughter that I could be like a lot better than a teacher, whoever that teacher might be, when it comes to teaching government or political science or politics. I mean, I have no doubt that I can educate her and other students on the reality of politics, like what really happens outside of, and you know, again, I'm not trying to criticize teachers. Some of these teachers are very young. Like I'll use my son as an example. He's 26 years old. He's teaching on the South Side of Chicago. He's a very smart kid. He reads a lot of books, like a lot of thick books. I'm not questioning his level of intellect at all, but he teaches social studies. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like I do social studies. I don't, you know what I mean?
Right.
When you know, because you really can't learn unless you have people. Here, I'll give you a good example. I can't remember if it was David Axelrod or somebody else, but Jennings, before he blew up a couple years ago as the big star that he was, Sue, when I had him on KMOX, this is before I even, you know, crossed over here, he would do a seminar, a semester, and he did several of these at Harvard. And it would be Scott, and then it wasn't Axelrod, but it was somebody else that was out there that had run one of the Clinton campaigns or something like that. But think about that opportunity. I've tried to encourage my journalism school to do this. So you have someone who's a big political consultant, because for people who don't know, you know, Jennings has a company in Louisville called Run Switch PR, and Churchill Downs is a client. He runs a lot of campaigns. So before Scott blew up as a pundit, he got a great profession and career, and he's, you know, doing a lot out there. But you go to Harvard, you got, you know, Jennings and someone from the left, really, really insiders explaining how S works, right? You can't read that stuff in a book. Even with, look, I think most of the people in the audience, this is not a criticism, because I don't even have the full comprehension of some of these constitutional amendments and some of the ways that these things work, right? But it does disappoint me that you seemingly, and this is not the only example, the audio that I just played, you have this level of just absolute inability to understand any of the history of the country from young people. I don't know if it's because they weren't taught. I don't know if it's because they don't care. I think a lot of us, we sound old and, you know, out of touch, and we say, yeah, I wish those young kids would have appreciation right. for freedom. But I don't think that they do. Like, I'd force every high school kid in America to watch Band of Brothers. Maybe they should read
that's
the book,
a good one.
But you know that they won't read.
Yep.
So, you know, let's force these kids to watch Band of Brothers and find out what the Greatest Generation did and the sacrifices they made. By the way, they made when they were 16 and 17 or 18. Like, a lot of them lied about their age. And what they did in a foxhole, and what these kids complain about, including, by the way, my daughter and my kids today, what's an inconvenience. We all do it. You know, I do the same thing. I get pissed off because a road's closed or whatever.
Yeah.
Thinking about the Greatest Generation sitting in a foxhole, freezing their ass off, losing limbs, and just hoping to make it back to their families. And that level of sacrifice gave us the freedoms that we have today. You know, I even told you this, Sue. I think you have a bit of a perspective on this. My trips to Europe in the last 4 years have encouraged me, because the Europeans have more of a appreciation for the freedoms that they're afforded because of America than some of the young people
sure.
in this country.
Yes.
So I don't know, you know, if it's mandatory civics education or mandatory tests. I've supported that in the past, but young people need to know a little bit more about how things work in this country. Tech Talk Tuesday with George Rosenthal. We'll tell you how things work or how they shouldn't work coming up. All right, it's time for this.
Tech Talk Tuesday with George Rosenthal of ThrottleNet. ThrottleNet.com.
Well, it's that time every week where we scare the hell out of the listeners. And here he is to do that, George Rosenthal. How are you this afternoon?
Doing great, doing great. How are you? Thanks for having me on. And I'm kind of jealous you were at Bell Reef today.
Oh, my goodness. I hope you are able to get out there. It's amazing. The course looks great. It was comfortable. Got to see some of the players. Rory was trying to fine-tune his game, which has not been very good lately. So it's going to be a really, really fun week here.
Oh, man.
But let's talk about, look, this meta trial is still going underway in California, right? I think we've covered this a little bit before. Are they actually getting down to the, you know, the nitty-gritty here where this is going to wrap or not?
Yeah, I mean, the last time we talked about this, it was very general. It was high level. Now we're starting. Now it's day one. We're on. So let's cover some of the details, because I think a lot of people really care about this who have children, especially under the age of 16 or 13 is where this whole court case is going to come together. So, look, I mean, to put it in total perspective, this, and for those of the adults who were lived through the 90s, Big Tobacco, when they were getting sued, they always won, until they lost. And this is that case. So we're talking a huge milestone case of what could happen and where the future is going to be for social media. So the prosecution is saying, and this is 29 states coming together, saying, look, you're hooking the users up. You're holding them as long as possible. You're harvesting their personal data, and you're hiding the truth from the public. And this is all aimed at kids under the age of 13, which is abhorrent to even think about. And how they're doing it is through, obviously, everybody here who use or is listening is used Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. You know, they're doing it through infinite scrolling, personalized recommendations, of course, and constant notifications. So it's a huge problem, because children under the age of 13 are suffering from anxiety, depression. I mean, they're having socialization problems. They're having body dysmorphia problems. They're having sleep deprivation because they're looking at this stuff at all hours of the night. It's a very big problem. It's an epidemic on our children. And of course, Meta is, you know, going to go against that. But remember, let's keep this in mind as we're listening to this case over the next 6 weeks, because that's what they're estimating is going to take. Meta already lost a case in New Mexico for $567 million. So the precedent's been kind of set, because remember that gal who claimed all kinds of mental issues and anxiety issues? Well, she won. So that precedent's already there. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so I was going to say, is the Deputy Attorney General of California, her name is Megan O'Neill. She said in court, they hid the truth. When it came time to make the decision, choose what's safe for kids or choose what's safe for its profits, time and time again, profits won. So if the states win here, this is what the coverage in Politico says, I just want your reaction, that they'll have a rare chance to force sweeping design changes to Instagram and Facebook that could decrease kids' spent time on social media and, by extension, eat into Meta's lucrative advertising revenue. So that's part of the goal here, is for the states to have more control over this, right?
Yes, and to ensure the safety of our children. And here's really what I'm excited about that point, is that if they lose, okay, they will have a mandatory disablement of the infinite scroll. So if you're scrolling for hours and hours, that will be gone. If you're under the age of 13, you will have to have verification of your age. You will not be able to sit there and scroll for 30 straight minutes, okay? Which is great. I love this. And they're going to have to be forced to turn off late night notifications. These social media platforms are sending notifications to your children's devices at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And it's and there is no regulation against it. The settlement money, okay, they're talking about $1.3 to $1.4 trillion. This is if Meta loses. I can cover the Meta wins here in a second, but
yeah.
If they lose, the money goes to fund youth mental health, which is amazing, and it forces this digital literacy programs in schools across the country to start teaching kids that life is more than what you see on a screen, that your friends matter, socialization matters. I can't even believe we're talking about this being taught to children.
I know.
But it has to be taught.
Yes, I was going to say, this had never occurred to me, but boy, is that a good idea.
It really is.
Yes.
And, you know, the other thing.
Because everybody's sitting like, yeah.
Well, we've talked about this, you and I, George, like outside of what you just recommended there on the meta stuff. But even I want to know more and more how, and I'm going to ask these questions as my daughter starts sixth grade, how these school districts are going to handle teaching about AI. Because you can't just ignore it. I think to a certain extent, that's what people are doing. Now, let me offer devil's advocate here. Okay, so the states say you hid the truth. You did this to, you know, maximize profits. I'm going to say, yeah, I'm a business. I want to maximize profits. I mean, these risks are, why would I be to blame for these risks when some of this is a parenting issue and things along those lines? Couldn't they argue that?
I agree, but it's the same argument as cigarettes. Okay, we're talking the same thing. Yes. You know what? At least cigarettes were 18 and older, but it still caused a massive problem with youth in America. And thank goodness that has that societal construct has slowly gone away. And you can't smoke on an airplane anymore, and you can't smoke in a doctor's lobby anymore.
Oh, the good old days!
It used to happen.
I know.
the good old days. We used to go to a doctor, and everyone was smoking in the lobby.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I still can't believe that we were, because I remember this, that people were allowed to smoke on planes.
It really, yes.
They did have good ventilation, but still, it's nuts. All right, let's move on here. Tech Talk Tuesdays, George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet. You have a topic here that says the backdoor breach, how hackers use small vendors to hit you. So what's
genius,
this about?
Evil genius.
Yeah, so it is evil genius. You're so right, Sue. It's not even funny. So they're trying to find ways to get into bigger corporations. And I mean bigger. I mean people that have 20 employees or more, okay? Not. So what they're doing is, because obviously people are starting to catch on to the fact that they need cybersecurity. They have to have cybersecurity tools in place. And now these smaller companies, 20 employees or up, are now using AI tools. So in order to infiltrate the business, instead of trying to, you know, just brute force attack, they think, well, why don't I go to some of their vendors? I'll go to their HVAC vendor, their heating and cooling. I'll go to their billing company, their bookkeepers, their property managers. I'll go to all the different people, the vendors that these companies are using, infiltrate the vendors, but not let the vendors know I'm there. Don't try to hack the heating and cooling company. Don't try to hack the cleaning company that comes to the business. But watch for the invoices that come through. And when they do, then try to get into the larger customer. Mm. So by doing this, the customer, so let's just say I hack a cleaning company. Cleaning company sends the business an invoice, okay, through an email. Then they copy that business's, that cleaning company's email and says, hey, we changed our checking account information. We're going to need you to fill out this information, and you're going to send the money to the cleaning company, but you send it to the bad guy. But here's the thing, is the poor cleaning company doesn't know they're being used as a hacker for all of their clients. So when you go to trace it, it takes a lot of looking into things and tracing it to realize that the cleaning company is actually helping the hackers steal money from all their clients.
That's crazy, which is, by the way, one of the reasons we recommend your company, because as you always say, it's not just the big companies, right? It's small, mid-sized companies that are getting hit with some of these things. All right. There's a topic on here that I'm personally curious about because I've seen it happen on my Apple devices where I'm being asked for, I mean, I always like to use Face ID when I can, but now there's this passkey thing. I don't even know what it is, but it's like a thing. And I know that what you're saying is that the tech giants want passwords dead. So what's the passkey push and what's happening with that?
Yeah, so really this is starting from the banks. The banks want passwords gone because there's so much fraud going on in the banking industry, and they're having to pay for basically all of the fraud. So passkeys is essentially a way that you don't even know what's being transferred between your device and the website or the company you're working with. So the company you're working with has a key. Let's just say it's a long numbered key. That key matches a key that's on your device, but you have no idea what it is. All you did was say, yes, I'd like to set up a passkey. You push a button, and then the magic happens behind the scenes.
Right.
But what's interesting is there's no text. There's no password string of letters, numbers, characters that get passed back and forth. All it's doing is matching a key that's on your computer or your phone to a key that the bank has on their website. And if the keys match, then they know it's you. And there's no way to track, or there's no way to fish that. There's no way to hack that because they can't, the keys have to match. And that means that the bad guys would have to hack the bank and they'd also have to hack you. So the chances of that happening are very, very slim to none. So pass keys are going to replace all of passwords. And thank God for that, because I am so done with passwords, I can't even stand it. And that's even with a password keeper. I'm just so done with them.
Well, I'm done with them, too. But let me back up on this, because I'm not sure I completely understand this, and I'm not very smart. So, like, I've noticed this on my, you know, on my iPhone, where I use, like, again, I use Face ID to get into the bank and everything. But then it says, you want to use a passkey. And I say, yes. So, in my mind, yep. I thought the passkey was just Face ID, but it's not that you're saying. You're describing something very different, right?
No, yeah. So they're using your face or fingerprint to then acknowledge that you are you. Once the device acknowledges you are you, then it sends the passkey to the vendor that you're using.
But is the passkey the same? Like, does it change?
It does change all the time, yes. And it can change. And it all depends on how the passkey is set up. But so great is you never see it. The bank or vendor that you're using, let's just say you're shopping online, and they have a passkey that has to match up with your passkey. They don't even know what the passkey is. It's all set up with algorithms digitally. But in order to acknowledge that you are you, it's using biometrics such as your touch ID, face, of course, in order to prove that you're you before the two devices can even talk to each other.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes
a little
bit more
sense. But the point is, you never had to type a password in.
Right.
You never had to transfer. And the issue is transferring text or characters across the internet, because that can be intercepted. That can be decrypted. That there's all ways that can be captured. And then now they've got your password. Well, there is no password because they'd have to have a key on your device that also matches the key on Amazon or Walmart.com or wherever, or Bank of America. And that's why the pass keys are so secure, because they'd have to hack into both and then match them up perfectly to your device in order to use it. And then on top of that, they then need the biometrics of your face or fingerprint to even acknowledge and to kick off the process
so this is a
of
good
matching
thing.
The keys together.
Yeah, that's
a good
really
thing.
Good.
I like to hear that. That's, hey, you know what? You've kind of encouraged me a little
bit. Yes,
that
was a positive.
Like,
hey,
we're going to end on a positive note, George
Rosenthal. Doom and gloom the whole time?
No, we'll end on a positive note. We will talk next Tuesday, and I believe I'm going to be at a baseball game next Tuesday with you guys, right?
Yes, looking forward to it. You're going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is for talking about AI and automation. We're going to have a bunch of guests. Of course, you're going to be there. It's going to be really great. If there's any businesses out there that would like to attend, business owners that have more than 20 employees, would definitely encourage you to go to throttlenet.com/cardinals. The event's coming up quick. I think there's only maybe a handful of seats left, but it's all you can eat, all you can drink in a box at the Cardinal game. And of course, you get to hang out with you.
And my personal security detail has been in touch with you guys already, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Just want to make sure that's all buttoned
up. And not only that, we know that you love Skittles or what, you know, we have this whole like setup of what you're requiring when you get there.
It's in my rider. Thank you for paying attention.
Your rider. Thank you. Yes.
Have a great week, George. We'll talk next Tuesday.
You know, my dad, when I was 3-4 years old, he lived in the area. I don't know exactly where he lived and which golf course that he drove by to work every day, but just got introduced to the game here and bought some clubs, brought it back home to Norway, and that's kind of how I got started playing golf. So pretty cool.
That's crazy. That's Victor Hovland today talking about some St. Louis connections to his golf game. Our own golf expert, Dan Reardon, no relation with us. I missed you out there today, Dan. I think you were in the media room doing some interviews, actually doing a job, and I was just out there kind of having fun and buying merch. But it was a fun first day of practice rounds, I think. How are you doing out there?
I was doing fine, Mark, and I think what today was to see what doesn't work, and I'm not aware of anything that didn't work out there. I think all the planning, all the preparation, including the rain on Sunday night, I think they came out of this day in a very positive frame of mind. Now, we still worry about the overnight rain tonight, but once we get past that hurdle, it's going to be a smooth sail from there on. And I did talk to Nick White, the superintendent, and he thinks he'll be fine. He wishes they didn't have the rain because the greens will not be quite as firm as he would like them to be. But like I said, it all went well. And by the way, Ludwig Arlberg, who was you saw on the range, he's going to be one of the favorites for sure. This is the young man that a year ago was put on the European Ryder Cup team before he had even ever played in a tournament. He's one of the bright young stars. I think he has a. I think he finished second in the Masters 2 years ago. You were around one of the bright young stars in the game.
I told Sue earlier, I'm placing money on Ludwig because I had a conversation. Well, it was funny. There was a guy from New Jersey that just went up to him. I'm watching Rory and Matt Fitzpatrick and several others on the range, and Ludwig kind of wraps it up, and he walks off, and the guy says, hey, can I ask you some questions? And he, you know, did this with a phone and a microphone, and he was asking him. It wasn't easy. He was like, what are the 10 countries that have the most golf courses, right? Well, the U.S. was number one, but Ludwig struggled on some of the others. And by the way, he almost forgot his own home country of Sweden, but super nice guy. And yes, I am aware of his skills, and I'll be very curious to see how he performs. Now, on the topic of Rory, he was on the range a long time this morning, Dan, and then I heard he took to the course. So he's trying to dial it in. I had some reports that things were drifting off the tee to the right. So what do you know about Rory's game right now?
Not too much coming out of today that I'm aware of. In fact, the practice rounds are a little misleading because the players will play four or five balls in some situations.
Right.
So, you know, I really wanted to get a good look because I hadn't seen a really good picture of 17 and how he plays straight. And I was talking to the pro out there, Mike Tucker, and Mike pointed out by straightening it out, they bring that right-hand creek into play all the way down the fairway. It used to be with the other tee, you could angle away from the water. Now you have to play parallel to the water.
Yeah.
So like Victor Hovland talked about the fact that his current miss is to the right. Well, right now, 17 is a very uncomfortable tee shot for him when we get to Thursday. And by the way, the tee times are out for the first 2 days of the tournament, and it'll be a little bit later start. They're going on at 9:03 on the first hole. Justin Thomas and Sahith Theegala, there'll be the first group out. If you're a fan of Scottie Scheffler, he's going out at 1:33. He'll be one of the third last groups out in the afternoon, and then they flip those, not entirely flipped, but they'll flip them a little bit going into Friday.
So I spent some time on 17. I saw Ryan Fox hit a tee shot, and it's a fascinating hole. And I've played this course enough to know the challenges there. And, you know, this was the hole that Tiger hit the creek on, you know, at the PGA tournament. But they've extended the hole. And, Dan, it's going to be, even for these guys, it's going to be hard to hit that green in two, right, on 17?
The 600 yards, and the course is wet. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. But I'm telling you, you cannot throw length at the players in today's world because they'll figure out a way to hit further than you can make it.
It was just stunning when I see these guys, and, you know, they say zero effort, but they're putting effort into it. But just, I saw Rory, I'm guessing it was a 7 or an 8 iron hitting it, you know, more than 200 yards, just crushing the ball this morning. So it's just impressive to watch these guys. Before I let you go, anything on the Pro-Am? I did talk to Ozzie. I know he's excited. You know anything about the Pro-Am tomorrow?
You know, the reason I think those are not announced is because technically they have a Pro-Am party tonight, and that's where the groups are set up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's supposed to be a lottery. We all know that's a stack deck, but it would look bad if they released it. And by the way, Mark, I'll give you a recommendation, and I mentioned this to the PGA Tour because they were not aware of it. If you want to sit and watch a hole, spend some time on the sixth hole, the par three, because from 1965 until the 1990s, that hole was the hardest par three in the history of the U.S. Open.
That's interesting. That is interesting.
And then Fox talked about the fact that they played it at 210 this morning, and at 210 with that hourglass slanted green. That's a terrible. In fact, Nick Price won the PGA Championship there because Gene Sowers took a six on that hole and blew his chances. I really encourage you to go behind the tee on six and get a sense of how difficult that hole is. And as I said,
we'll do it.
Until Oakmont came along at 300 yards with a par three, it was the hardest par three in U.S. Open history.
Dan, I got to let you go. We'll talk tomorrow. See you at the course tomorrow, okay?
Enjoy tomorrow.
All right, I'm going to cheat on audio cut of the day here. Frank Beard, who is the drummer, longtime drummer, one of the founding members of ZZ Top, died today, unfortunately, in Richmond, Texas. So we'll go out with a little LaGrange, and we'll talk tomorrow at 3.
To that. Get more at 971talk.com.